This is the Hollywood Outsider, a weekly entertainment podcast with a new episode every Thursday. This is actually our New Year's episode, and that means that you get a little segment we like to call the Best of Ho 2014 Volume 2. We had a Volume 1 a few weeks ago. This is Volume 2, where we have several segments that listeners actually picked. These are ones that they wanted to hear about. There's several different segments. There's a couple little bits that people want to hear again. And we kind of threw it all together for one final episode for the year, just to let you guys have a nice sample of what the Hollywood Outsider offers on a yearly basis. Now, we will be back in the first Thursday of January. That's not New Year, so January 8th. So look for that episode then. But until then, we want to treat you with some of, like I said, listener picks. You can always find us at the website, thehollywoodoutsider.com. That's thehollywoodoutsider.com. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, or anywhere else you can find an RSS feed. Now, if you've never listened to us, there are four Hollywood Outsider hosts. There's myself, Aaron Peterson. There's Justin McCumber, who is also an author, and his new book, A Broken Magic, is in stores, so be sure to check that out. It's available on the website. Just go to thehollywoodoutsider.com. You see a link. Brian Williams, our Southern film and TV extraordinaire. He's kind of a little trivia genius, and he pauses a lot, but he's full of wisecracks, and he makes us laugh all the time. And also Scotty Clark, who's going to be joining me here in a second. He's kind of the every guy on our show. He just loves movies and loves to talk about movies, but he's not a film snob like some of us can be about some topics. They are the four that comprise this show. We have been doing this. This is our fourth year. We're starting our fourth year, and we are excited to be able to have enough stuff that actually you guys seem to like to make a best of Volume 1, let alone Volume 2. And apparently there's enough. So I just want to say thanks to you guys for listening throughout the year. I hope you enjoyed this show. There's some nice little throwbacks, some good segments, a couple really funny bits that you guys wanted to hear again. So we're going to throw them out there. Hope you enjoy. Okay, now we're going to introduce each one of these little segments. These are some of our listener picks for their favorite parts of the show throughout the year. Now, obviously, we can't recap everything that was great about The Hollywood Outsider because they're all pretty fantastic.
I kind of got to agree with you there.
Yeah, and that's Scotty Clark. You haven't been introduced yet, but Scotty Clark, thanks for coming to help me segue into this stuff.
Not a problem. For those that don't know me.
Everybody that's listening knows you, man. You listen to the Christmas episode. He does a great job with a nice little poem, which will be at the very end of this episode, so you can hear it again.
Are you throwing it in again?
I'm throwing it in again.
Oh,
a lot of requests for it. Anna Maria Germa, she wants us to talk about episode 133, replay the topic from episode 133, which was, what has the better stories, movies or TV?
Oh, okay.
Do you remember that one?
I do remember that one. It was a good one.
She thinks it was a very good one. Mm-hmm. So what we're going to do is we're going to play that now. Throughout these segments, you will not hear any of the listener picks and stuff because we condensed everything just to make it quick and to the point. So I hope you guys enjoy this little snippet. Here is movies and TV. What tells the better story? All right. Well, people keep saying that TV has better storytelling than ever. And also that there are better stories being told on television now. So we're going to talk about that. First, how do you feel about storytelling in movies these days? And I don't mean how great the movies look. Let's leave special effects and everything else out of it. We're just talking about story. How well the story is told and the writing holds up.
I think it's definitely getting better. I think that, you know, a lot of people want to decry the prevalency of sequels these days. And there's some merit in that. But I think that we also, when they're done well, we're more than happy to have those sequels come out. And, you know, when you look at what Marvel has been doing with their franchises, really planning out far in advance which characters are going to be, you know, which films, which when they're going to come out, what they're going to, how they're going to fit into the overarching phase one, phase two, phase three arcs. I think that, you know, one of the reasons that people respond so well to these films and the reason that they're able to get such good talent in front of and behind the camera is because they have put a lot of work into it, a lot of planning, a lot of thought. And as long as if movie studios will keep doing that, and, you know, instead of just throwing whatever they've got out there, but instead giving some real thought and planning behind how they want to tell these stories. And I think they're going to have a lot of success. I mean, TVs are 2 hour. I mean, a movie's, you know, two and a half hours, maybe three. A TV show, you know, can be easily 10 times that. So it's almost not a fair comparison as to how they can tell a story or who's telling them the better ones. But movies have a grander scale to them. I mean, I don't care how good to me a Game of Thrones scene looks. I think that nothing I've seen on there has toppled the things that I've seen on like the Lord of the Rings or the Hobbit films. And I think it's just it's more of the amount of money that's thrown at the screen and then the size of that screen. I think if Game of Thrones had hundreds and hundreds of million dollars per episode, then yeah, but they also don't have a year or 2 years to make that one episode. So it's a little unfair, but I think movies are doing a better job today than they've ever done. And hopefully it'll just get better.
I feel like there's fewer fresh ideas in film than in TV shows. I feel like we get a lot more, at least out, not necessarily in the independent market. Like independent films, they have a little more freedom. But I feel like the things that are in mainstream movies are either we get a lot of reboots, we get a lot of rehashes, or we get a lot of adaptations on older properties. I feel like in the TVs where we get some fresh ideas. We get our Breaking Bads, which I don't think was that based on a book series that I'm not aware of.
No.
We're talking just movie. We'll get to TV in a minute. What about just the movies?
Well, what I'm saying is I think that with the movies, everything seems like a rehash of something else that's already been done. Very rarely do I get something that is like, well, I've never seen that concept before. I mean, it does happen. I just don't think it happens fewer and fewer, it seems.
I would pretty much agree with Scott there. I just think the as far as the big screen goes, the well is it may not be dry, but it's close to being tapped out. I mean, and we could just be in a lull, and then maybe in a few years or so, all of a sudden we'll have a rush of more interesting, I guess, more original stuff. But I mean, we are getting movies like Prisoners was, mm-hmm. I thought was a pretty good, you know, written movie. So, this year the Oscars was pretty well represented, I thought, for Best Picture. I wouldn't have been upset with about half of them, you mm-hmm. know, winning it. So there is, I think, you know, the vast majority of it is just the reboots, the redos, all that stuff. But there is a kind of a growing trend though with some of the more original stuff, and I hope it continues because I'm kind of tired of seeing the same old stuff over and over.
One thing though I would say quickly though is I disagree that the well is tapped out or going dry. The well is actually limitless. It's the laziness of a lot of Hollywood executives and screenwriters that is what's at fault. There is no end of good stories that can still be created, new, interesting takes on things. Ask any writer out there. They've got a notebook full of ideas.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully
yeah,
they're all good, but Hollywood's just too fucking lazy these days.
Yeah, but also a lot of these great ideas, depending on what genre, could cost hundreds of millions of dollars to do it or to do it right. And it may not be something that they feel like is a worthy gamble. There's plenty of content out there. There's millions of scripts that get submitted that nobody picks up, or maybe the only reason somebody picks it up is because another company is rolling with a movie that's similar to it. So they scramble to find something that they have in their pile that's close to it. And that's the only reason it gets picked up is just to compete with the other one.
One thing I was going to say is that, I'll be honest with you, I looked at the quality of movies that have come out recently, and I do think movies have been fun and enjoyable. I thought last year was a great year for entertaining movies, but not for great stories. There were a few select films I thought had great stories involved, but the majority were spectacle. You know, mm-hmm. I got a lot of spectacle. I didn't get a lot of, wow, I want to come back to this character. This is a character I would love to see them do another movie. I would like to see, you know, additional stories told. That I think has been lacking in films for a while now. And the level of movies I would call classics, you know, we used to have every year, there would be a handful of movies you can, wow, that's going to be a classic. You know, even like a Usual Suspect, something small where you, man, that is a classic. That's going to be a classic for years. I don't feel like there are as nearly as many of those anymore, because it seems like they're just going toward the business model where it's all about spectacle and not so much about telling a story. It's all about how pretty can we make it, because that's what gets people in, instead of, you know, spending $5-10 million on a small movie with a good story and getting it in there, because it's not worth the investment because they don't seem to be getting their money back.
But right. Yeah, and I generally agree. But to Justin's point, I mean, with what they've done with the Marvel properties is obviously shown so much thought and foresight and planning, just mind-boggling levels of planning and outlining of whatever their master plan is. And that's refreshing. That's neat to see. And especially, I guess, you know, maybe we just got to thank Robert Downey Jr. for that, because if Iron Man had tanked, we might not be getting all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah, that is fair.
I also got to say, though, I almost don't feel like it's fair to say that it's just laziness either on movie executives, because they are in the business of making money at the end of the day. And I think it's less about being lazy and more going, taking the easy route towards money. You know what I'm saying?
That's the first statement.
Which you know, if you're a business, your goal as a business is to make as much money as possible with the least amount of effort.
Well, but isn't that lazy? I mean, taking the easy route is taking the lazy route.
I would argue that that's smart versus lazy. That's working smarter,
not harder.
Sure, it's
smart in the business aspect, but when it comes to your audience and giving them compelling stories, is it as interesting? No, but, you know, what else are we going to do? Read?
That's crazy talk. What about television? Are you guys finding the storytelling better or worse than in previous years?
These last couple of years have been great. I think it's definitely getting better. There's, you know, sort of a lot of the restrictions that we've had in the past, they're pretty much gone. You know, they can be more aggressive with whatever the subject matter. They could be more, you know, more dark, maybe a little more crude, whatever, than we've been able to do in the past. And there's so many channels that are not even just channels, but even, you know, venues like Netflix and Amazon. I mean, they're creating stuff and there's just so much out there right now. And I think it's definitely better this last year. Probably 1 to 3-4 years than it has pretty much ever been.
Yeah, I remember when TV used to be just, you know, each week it was Stephen J. Canal or whatever that guy's name was. It made like Riptide and Simon and Simon. Every show was like that. You remember that? Show was like that.
Sit, Ubu, sit.
Yes,
good
exactly.
Job. Good job.
And then you had, you know, the Murder, She Wrote and the mysteries and stuff and your basic sitcoms, but characters never evolved. So the quality of stories and movies were always surpassing television because they never did anything with the character. They weren't really characters. They were just actors that were hired to tell these jokes or carry out these actions or solve this mystery.
Are you fucking calling Lee Majors not an artist?
Yeah. I'm pretty much saying that. Yeah.
How dare you? He's the unknown stuntman.
He is. Sing the song. Do it.
No.
But the last few years, like Brian said, it just feels like
makes Eastwood look so fine.
Thanks to cable, and honestly, it's really thanks to cable. Thanks to cable, we have networks that are willing to take a chance on real stories and real characters and evolving stories and evolving characters, and we're actually going somewhere where we never went anywhere. I mean, you could watch a show like Simon and Simon was one of my favorite shows as a kid. That show never evolved once. They were the same guys at the end of that series that they were at the beginning of that series.
Yep.
And now, you know, you go in one season and characters evolve ridiculous. I mean, Walking Dead, nothing happens in that show ever. It's one chasing each people to the next people, but the characters evolve. Mm-hmm. You know, they change throughout the course of the show. And that's happening in almost every series now, it feels like. So, except apparently Big Bang Theory.
They're evolving. They have girlfriends.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And it's devolving.
Hey, you said it.
I hope your wife listens.
I measure my quality of writing based on my backlog of what bear with me, with which, how many shows I want to get caught up on versus how many movies I want to get caught up on. There are a lot more interesting stories in television shows to me that I want to go back to and get caught up on than movies. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So to me, and the fact that I, like Justin said, I can get invested in a character over a long period of time instead of a little one note thing. I will say though, on the flip side, when it comes to stories and television shows, you do get a little bit of the filler episodes or lots of just really down moments in there. You know, I mean, I think a lot of, lots of TV shows have them. I mean, there was even one in Breaking Bad that I was like, why is this episode even here? It doesn't have anything to do. It's just like,
if you're talking about the fly episode, I love that episode.
I like the episode, but it was just like, what's going on? So, you know, again, you know, it gives them the chance to kind of just stretch out seasons. I mean, we could bring up all sorts of shows that do that. Like, why are we in our eighth season of this show? You just want to make money instead of just sewing it up tight. So, I see good and bad for TV shows, but the stories just to me in TV you've got more time and a little bit more interesting.
Well, and Aaron, you're absolutely right. I mean, cable changed the landscape of things forever. I mean, not to say that there weren't some good, compelling, really well-written shows before cable television, you know, not cable television, but, you know, cable-created TV shows came out. I mean, Buffy was really great, X-Files. There were some good ones, but I think it was with Breaking Bad and Mad Men that both of those shows coming out and just being so compelling and original and unusual, they kind of started a bit of a revolution, and suddenly people were talking about TV shows again.
Mm-hmm.
Where for a while people just kind of stopped. And you know, when you looked at how TV used to be looked at as, well, that's where actors go to die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would never see a movie star appear in a television show. But now you see that, and you see it a lot, because TV is not a ghetto anymore. It's a place where they can – I mean, look at something like House of Cards. You have got just a shitload of fantastic actors all working at the top of their game on that show. And Game of Thrones, I mean, is sure, they don't have as much money or as time to do their episodes as – Peter Jackson has to do his Lord of the Rings films, but they are still fucking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
There is not a single episode of one of these seasons yet that I didn't find compelling. And I wasn't just riveted in my seat the entire time. And really TV and between television and indie films, I think that's where you're really seeing your most interesting pushes into stories that haven't been told yet, or haven't been told in particular ways. And I'm really now, I'm like Scott, I have so many more TV shows that I need to catch up on or that I am watching than I ever did before.
And I really like how the networks are just starting to take the cable model. You know, cable adopted the philosophy that let's do shortened seasons. We can get more character depth, more story growth. And you know, the networks are starting to do that. Like Sleepy Hollow, they did that with Sleepy Hollow. And they learned, they're the ones that started that trend with Lost, really, mm-hmm. I would say, because they realized, oh, okay, we can't spread this show out. It's very serialized. We got to keep them all encapsulated. And now they're starting to do that because they've seen cable be successful with it. So they want to create water cooler shows too. And that's the only way you're going to do it is by shortening them so you can actually keep the stories tight. Because 22 episodes, which is the standard for network television, is too long for these kind of shows. You know, like a show like The Blacklist, it's a great show. It really is. And it's trying to do a serialized story. 22 episodes is very, very hard to maintain for 1 year, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas on cable, they can do 13 episodes and they can hit every beat they want to hit and nail it because they don't have to drag it out and have all those filler episodes like you're talking about. Walking Dead is the exception. That one has every episode's filler.
Well, plus you leave people wanting more instead of like giving them 22 episodes off the bat and allowing them to get tired of it early on.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, with cable, you also get more skin, more violence, and more language. So the limits are taken off, and that helps quite a bit too to create a more compelling and, you know, depending on the show, realistic kind of performance and story.
Mm, sex box.
Mm-hmm.
So
back to that.
Oh, yeah. So let's settle it. When you want to care about a character or watch something unfold, who do you trust more, a movie or a series?
For me, it's a series. Although sometimes it is nice to have a story wrapped up in a nice little two-hour bow, the longer time frame to me gets me more invested in the characters and the story. It just really does. And since I rarely rewatch movies, I mean, obviously there's rare exceptions. I don't rewatch a whole lot of movies anymore. I have my Blu-ray collection, or any digital collection that I have is I don't buy them nearly as much as I used to because what's the point? I'm not going to watch them again. But TV shows, I go back to. I'm considering going back and watching through Breaking Bad again. I watch Game of Thrones every time a new season comes. I rewatch all the previous ones beforehand. Sitcoms, all these things. I enjoy going back to TV shows more and more often than I do movies.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's I hate Joffrey. I love Daryl. I just don't get that attachment in a movie. It's probably just because of the time frame, and you've got to move along at some point. And in some movies, you care about the hero or one of the other characters, but you just don't attach to them like you do in some of these shows. And it's just as far as wanting to watch something unfold and as far as, care or, just waiting for somebody to die, whatever the case is, give me a TV series.
Fair enough. I miss the days when movies knew how to nail it. Mm-hmm. They could get a character and grow them and build them in two and a half hours. And it just feels like they're not doing it. And I'm sure it's a combination of business and laziness. So I think you and Scott, you and Justin are both right on this one. I think it's a combination of the two, and it's just made movies. They're still fun to me. I still enjoy going to the movies, but the stories aren't nearly being told as well. They're still fun because it's all razzle dazzle and special effects and wow, that's fun and exciting and da 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 da. But when it comes to the characters I can really give two shits about, it's going to be TV.
Well, and plus, like you said, it's all about spectacle. I mean, it's getting to the point I've become a little jaded even going to the theater because when I look at a movie, I'm like, do I need to see that in the theater or can I wait for it on?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are
on DVD or DVD or Blu-ray or digital, whatever. It's become expensive to go see movies. I can wait the 3 or 4, maybe 6 months to wait for it to come and watch it at home for a lot cheaper.
I got to come in on movies, and not because I don't love what television has to offer. I am just as enamored as you guys are, but there's something about the grandeur of film that gives stories something extra. And I'm sure people younger than me are just fine with waiting for certain films to come home so they can watch on their high def televisions with their surround sound. And I've got all that too, but I don't care how good my TV is or how rich my surround sound is. When I want to watch something like The Avengers or, The Matrix, Star Wars, whatever, nothing I have at home will compare with what the experience is in a theater. It's a matter of, just like it is in the bedroom, it's a matter of square inches, and the TV, just isn't going to compete. And I don't know if it's because television or movies have so much more money available to them or if it's the time that they have. But look at something like Catching Fire. Like I said, I just recently rewatched that and I watched a lot of the supplemental material. And, it talked a lot about the costumes and the sets and the things they had to go through to get all that done and the time it took. And could they do that on TV, on a TV's time scale and budget? No, they just couldn't. It's impossible. But so I think there's still a grandeur movies have that I really respond to.
That's not story. That's spectacle.
It's not story, but what it is it's all the things that back a story up. Okay. When you've got all that time and all those people and all that money, sometimes it's a bad thing. Yes, sure. But sometimes it can also really help by giving that story a more epic stage to be told on. And I think that there are just, there's still something about when I see a story being told on the screen, it just looks and feels more special. I don't care how great my system is at home. When I rewatch a movie that I saw in the theater at home, it just doesn't feel as big.
That's more of the showing the story. That's not really telling a story or man. I mean, that's your choice. That's whatever you want to believe. It's your pick.
It's like you don't know quite how to disagree. I see what you're saying. I am talking a lot about things other than story, but to me, those quite often those things back that story up. They give that story more depth. They give it more believability. They enrich everything around that story. But I think movies also still have some pretty good stories to tell. I mean, when I think about my favorite stories of all time, they're movies. They're movies. Star Wars, the Star Trek films.
I'm talking about right now, though. The question is right now.
Right now, I'm still getting fantastic films.
Okay.
Oh, that was good stuff. Brought back some memories. You waxing nostalgic.
I'm too old, man. My memory. I get one memory a day.
Just one?
Just one. It's usually pee. Gotta pee. Yep.
Well, at least you remember that.
Memory's over.
That's good. Well, hey, we got another request from one of our listeners, a good friend of mine, D.A. Cheney. She asked us to talk about our go back and listen to our topic on raunchy comedies, which we talked about back on episode 148.
Yeah, that was raunchy.
That was a very raunchy episode.
Very raunchy. Remember, that's the one where we told people you might not want to listen to this.
Mm-hmm. I think we got a lot of complaints too, didn't we?
I don't care. As long as they're not like real serious and get a shutdown in North Korea, I'm fine with it.
Oh, okay. All right. So good.
Well, you ready?
I'm ready if you are. Let's do it.
Okay. Let's roll tape. Can we roll tape? I don't know, but we're gonna roll tape. Here, roll tape.
We're gonna ask our producer real quick. Can you hey Eddie, can you roll that tape for us?
Scotty, I do have to tell you, I feel bad for you because I can't remember the last time somebody tried to make me feel bad or immature for loving video games. You sound like you get it on a daily basis, and I don't get that. I'm glad.
Well, I leave the house, so.
Wow, he just ribbed you.
Just messing with you.
That's right.
Wow, and I was really trying to be nice.
There it goes. The gloves came back off.
Fuck you.
All right, let's go to our From the Outside In topic, where we talk about raunchy comedies. Now, basically, it's no holds barred. If you are offended by anything, I would probably skip this because we're just going to, you know, it might come up, literally. So we're going to talk about raunchy comedies. Wow. They are often called sex comedies. They've been around for decades. Really, I don't know if you really say it. Did Animal House really start them, or was it more like the fraternity stuff in the 80s? What would you guys say?
I would say Animal House started it.
And then it just got more and more worse as the years went on?
Yeah.
I don't know. It seemed to me like Porky's, at least in my lifetime experience, Porky's was the first movie that ever came out that everybody was like, oh my God, you are not going to go see that. And I saw it anyway.
See, that's kind of what I was thinking. But, you know, a lot of people said Animal House, so I didn't want to automatically.
I think it's one of those things like it starts, but there's always one that maybe is the kind of the benchmark later.
Well, I look at it as I can't think of anything. When I was a kid, my mom let me watch Animal House, no problem. I wasn't allowed to watch Porky's, which means I needed to watch Porky's.
Mm-hmm.
And I did, and it's not nearly as good as people want to make it out to be. But it was something that I just felt like you had to sneak away, find a way with your friends to see that movie. So to me, that's kind of where it started, I guess.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
I had to go back and rewatch. In preparation for this, I went back and rewatched the Tallywhacker scene. God, that makes me laugh every time.
Tallywhacker.
Classy. Oh, my God.
Oh, it's so funny because the
when
woman is trying to
pulling on the penis, man. Just through
that too. But it was funnier to me seeing them sitting in that office talking about it, and the kids are cracking up laughing in the background. The cop's trying not to laugh. He finally cracks up laughing, and then the principal is holding the straight face for the whole time until, like, at the very end, he just cracks up. The woman gets pissed, and, oh, dude, it makes me laugh so hard every time. Why don't we get that sketch artist in here from the police station? Identify the incriminating mole. It's just so funny.
I'm sorry, but when she was trying to pull that dick through that wall.
what was she going to do with it?
Who cares?
We don't want to know.
I'm not going to let this slip through my fingers.
It was a glory hole before they knew what a glory hole was.
Yeah, right.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, we all know humor is subjective, but these comedies rely more on visual jokes than verbal. I would say most of them do. So when you watch them, how far is too far?
Well, apparently I draw the line at ingesting semen, because I about...
In what?
Ingesting semen.
Swallowing the semen?
Yes. Okay. Because I
thought... I was making sure I was, you know, not gesturing semen.
Gesturing.
Like here's a swirly. Yeah.
He said ingesting. I know. We all know what that word means.
I just like to hear it.
We did.
I just like to hear it.
I almost lost my dinner when I saw the second Jackass movie, and I know that's not a traditional movie. You know, that's the real life.
They're still raunchy.
Yeah, they're pretty raunchy.
Oh, man. I seriously, that's like the only time I've ever come close to throwing up in a movie theater before.
Sorry. I'm 12.
Outside of that, I'm not really bothered or afraid of any other topic, even if it's visual. I get annoyed with the overuse of poop. Like, Zach and Miri Make a Porno came pretty close.
It did.
And, but you got to really, really push the envelope for me to get grossed out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know if there is, for this kind of movie, if there is anything is too far. I mean, even cum jokes, you know, in Van Wilder, when they're filling up all of those donuts with that bulldog's semen.
Oh, I forgot about that.
These guys are eating it. It's just, whoa, wow, this is really warm and tasty. Even
salty.
That is not too far.
I don't know.
For
that's
a good raunchy comedy, you cannot have limits because you never know what's really going to break through and be hysterical. And that packing those donuts.
He's got one broken in half and pouring it down his throat. Like, oh
man.
And who even eats donuts like that? They're almost smearing it all over their face. I don't quite understand
well,
that
if
one.
Well, if the cream inside's all tasty and warm, you just want to shove that down.
Never had a ham with a real donut, but apparently a semen donut is delicious.
So yeah, poop, pee, semen, whatever. It's all, for me, it's all game.
See, I'm not the same way. Bathroom humor. Sometimes it works. I actually think the Zach and Mary scene surprised me with how funny it was. Because that I never expected. And I'm sure everybody in the theater thought about it. Nobody thought they would go there. And then it happened because I remember seeing that one in the theater where he pulls out and whoosh, everywhere. And the whole audience just went, what? Because it took a second to register.
Yep.
Yeah, I didn't expect it. But normally, like, diarrhea, because I hate the, like, Dumb and Dumber's one. I know you guys love it. I hate that scene.
Oh, that scene's so funny.
I don't find diarrhea scenes funny at all. There's just something...
Yeah, but I mean, it's not so much like the diarrhea is actually funny. It's the fact that you're busted. Yeah. You know you can't hold it. You've got to put it somewhere. And the only place that you can put it is a device that is broken, which means as soon as I walk out of here, I know I'm busted. So I think that's what the funny part is. I mean,
yeah, but it's been done to death. So for me, it's
yeah,
not
but it's not
funny.
Been done as well.
Yeah, fair enough.
This weekend I was watching Bad Grandpa 0.5.
Oh God,
where they go through and they show you a lot of stuff that they didn't put in the movie, and sometimes they explain why it wasn't. But one scene that they didn't put in was a scene where him as Bad Grandpa had this colostomy bag attached to him, and as he's getting into a whirlpool into which two other people are already in, this colostomy bag slips out and then just spills shit.
Oh.
All in this whirlpool, they could not get out fast enough.
Oh.
And they just walk away.
Oh.
And my wife and I laughed just until we hurt. So shit, it works.
How did that not make it in there? Because they had the other shit joke, apparently.
I don't know, but there's... Oh, God, and that shit scene?
That one was funny.
Eats up
that
the side
funny.
Of that... that Oh, Aaron, it may be too much for you, but I love a good poop joke.
Some of them are funny, but it has to be something I haven't seen 100 times. Like the diarrhea thing, I don't know. I think, what was it, something about Mary? All these movies have done it where I'm in there and all I got is a hand towel. All right, that joke's been done to death. It's just not funny to me. But
yeah, but Franks and Beans are.
Franks and Beans.
Frank the Beans. Frank the Beans.
He was masturbating.
You mean the beans above the Frank?
How do you get the beans above the Frank? I'm just going to back the train up. We got a bleeder.
As little as Scott, relatively speaking, as few movies as Scott has seen compared to the rest of us, whenever he breaks out with lines from an old movie, it just makes it that much more fun.
I don't like the Danny McBride stuff. And I don't mean just him in general. I mean like the actors or writers or whatever, where they have to have that movie where they just try to say the crudest thing possible just to say the crudest thing possible. Yeah. You know, where they sit there and say, cock come, you know, and it's just like over and over and over. And that's not funny. I don't find it funny. I try.
I don't find it funny.
Well, I don't.
Luckily, that's not why he's here.
I find it funny the first 27 times it happens, but usually at some point, you're telling the same joke? All right. Stop being funny. So why do you guys like these kind of movies? Why do people like these kind of movies? Because they're wrong in every way, shape, or form, and we're such a PC fucking culture anymore where you can't say anything without offending everybody. Why do these movies still work?
I think we've all had embarrassing moments and stuff, and I think there's a lot of these – most of these movies do have one or two scenes that remind you of maybe not – okay, maybe – You didn't stick your dick through a hole in the shower and have somebody grabbing it on the other end.
I've tried. It's not for lack of trying, Brian.
But, you know. But, hey, that's probably why you hang out at the truck stops. but it's – I think there's – you know, there is – we've all had embarrassing moments. And I think a lot of that plays to that. Like, there, you see a lot of these scenarios that are – that you get busted, you know, whether it's – I don't know – shaving your bush, whatever, whether it's getting caught with your pants down, you know, in front of the computer, whatever the case is. I just think it kind of plays to that. I think it kind of strikes a chord with a lot of people out there. And the fact that what's that?
Well, when you said shaving bush, it reminded me of that scene in She's Out of Your League where Jay Baruchel wants to shave his pubes, but he doesn't quite know how, so his friend gets in there and does it for him, and he's all meticulous with the
see what I mean? It reminds you of the time when you know you and your buddy were shaving your pubes. So, and that's what I'm talking about.
Oh yeah. For me, you've all done that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Yeah. I'm doing it right now.
Scott's yeah.
For me, these kind of
scissor man.
Why do you think Scott quit recording at his house?
Can't shave from there.
For me, this kind of comedy makes me feel like a kid. I mean, it's like a guilty pleasure kind of thing. It brings out the inner child. I don't know. You're not a big dick and fart joke kind of guy. I don't want to live in a world where farts aren't funny anymore.
Thank you. Yes.
Like, farts will forever be. Hell, I teach elementary
really?
Kids.
We're applauding
it's,
then, huh?
It's part of my job to laugh at farts. Hell, my favorite part of the day is when I get to crop dust my students and then walk away and then watch them point and blame each other. That's like.
You make sure I walk out ahead of them.
Exactly. And then I watch them like blame each other from across the room. And it's like, it's the little things that you treasure. So that and like. These kind of movies also make sex a topic that was no longer taboo. You know, I grew up and was basically told that sex is like this bad thing that you never talk about. It never is to be discussed.
It is.
You know,
it's
and then
shameful.
And then these movies that are centered around that topic, it helped me to kind of realize that it's just how the world works. And, you know.
I've never jerked off a bulldog.
Well,
not once.
Well, you ain't been living, my friend.
No, but that dachshund got a pretty good hand job, though.
I mean, yeah. I mean, Scott's got it. Scott has it perfectly right. These are jokes aimed at the kid inside of us that laughs when Grandpa farts and points at the dog when they drop a deuce in the middle of the living room. I don't want to live in a world either where farts aren't funny, where poop's not funny, where a sideways glance at a pair of swinging nuts ain't funny. It appeals to the little kid in all of us, and especially me, because I am all about dick and fart jokes. I mean, that's why I think I like Kevin Smith so much. He's never gotten over it either.
I want to I want to meet a guy who's actually fucked a pie and just have a conversation.
I'm sure that number has increased since 1998.
Like pies were just flying off the shelves. Yeah. Somebody's like, well, how warm do we need it to be? Some poor guy puts them in the microwave and burns his dick off.
A very delicate balance. 1 degree too hot and you are not having a good time.
There's a lot of hospital visits of burnt members. Just...
I remember when Something About Mary came out with a hair gel thing, and I remember sitting in the audience when it happened, and at least 10 girls around me asking, "Wait, what did she put in her hair?
What
is that? Why is that some kind of actual gel?" And just didn't get it until like 10 minutes later. Oh. I think they did that so well. They really did so well.
Oh,
it's that dangling goop.
Singing from his ear.
It just flew at her.
Yeah, I mean, semen really wasn't, at least as far as I remembered, it wasn't featured too often in a movie. But I think the first time I ever saw it used as a comedic prop was in that film.
Well, it was used in certain movies, but you wouldn't see it on a Friday night at the theater.
Well. Without a triple X at the end of it, yes.
Okay. And you know who else requested that was Jonathan Speer.
Oh, okay.
And Jonathan, longtime listener, he also wants us to talk about or play back episode 149, which where we talked about heroines.
Like the drug?
No, heroines.
Oh, plural. Like
lady heroes.
Oh.
Female heroes, man. Strength.
And I'm with you.
This is me doing a visual representation of what a female hero looks like. And nobody on the radio can see it.
Awesome. Injected into my arm.
All right, jackass. Here we go. This is Jonathan Speer. Here's your request for heroines. Let's go to the topic. Let's go to From the Outside In. We're talking action heroines. We are always talking about these manly men running around, saving the world. But that culture's really changed over the last decade or so. We've had quite a few ass-kicking women on our movie and TV screens that we honestly just haven't talked enough about. So we're going to do that this week. That's our topic. You know, it wasn't too long ago where guys would be sitting around yammering and saying things like, but she's just a girl. I'm sure we've all done that at some point, whether you want to admit it or not. But now we have Scarlett Johansson. Believe it or not, she counts, Brian. Jennifer Garner, Angelina Jolie, Yvonne Strahovski, and a lot of other women that are just kicking those barriers down. I want to know, what do you think changed?
Well, the older generations that never would have allowed a pretty lady to get her hands dirty in a fight.
Well, she's got to make a sandwich.
Right. She's got to, you know, be knocked up and making me a sandwich.
Just got to do my laundry before I get home from work.
Exactly.
Where's my dinner?
That generation is dying off, and they're getting older. And us youngerins that are coming up, you know, we're, because of comic books being filled with heroic women and, you know, video games being filled with them and all so many other segments of our culture developing these strong women characters, it only makes sense that, you know, the film industry would catch on with that and really bring us a lot of really good, strong heroines. And I think the charge in some ways has actually been led by television. You know, you mentioned Jennifer Garner. You know, when she was an Alias, she kicked a lot of ass.
Yes, she did.
And that show is like 15 years old now, I think, when it first started. You got Yvonne Strahovski, who was fantastic in Chuck. Jessica Alba, when she was in Dark Angel. You know, I really hated when that show didn't get a third season because I thought it was really strong.
She was actually very good in it.
Yeah. And she was actually very good in it, yes. Yeah, since then... Not so much, but her what brought her to fame, Dark Angel, was a really good TV show, and she was good in it. And I think that television kind of helped set the stage, pardon the pun, for the film industry to come in and start doing the same, you know, with Kate Beckinsale and you know, you mentioned Jennifer, Angelina Jolie, Scarlett Johansson. There are a lot of women out there on screens kicking butt, and I think it's a great thing.
I think that as a society, we're slowly getting towards the point where we start looking at people as people instead of...
Like we should.
Right. Instead of men and women. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like we're always like looking up at like two different groups of people. They're just people. I think you told me a long time ago that like the word actress was actually made up. They were all actors at one point, and then they had to differentiate it for whatever reason. And I feel like we're almost going back to that, where we can get to the point where we're calling them actors.
That's what they should be called.
Altogether, instead of actors and actresses. I think that'll mess up the Oscars a little bit. But
that'll probably never change, because that's a historic thing or whatever. But and plus, it's separate. It gives it a little bit more competition, you know, whatever.
Well, they're going to be female actor, you know, best male actor, best female actor.
Which is fine, and that's how I think it should be, because I don't think it should be a different word, because they're acting, so they should just be actors. And a lot of it is people pay for it, and they started watching it. You know, once that happens, that's when Hollywood starts paying attention. You know, they – and I guess before I get into my whole analogy, I wonder how much of it has to do with single-parent households. I know, and stay with me for a second.
No, I get you.
Because for decades and decades and decades, nobody ever got divorced. They always had the mom and the dad, and they had that culture where dad was a breadwinner, mom stayed at home. So they kind of saw mom as this very demure, making dinner, making sandwiches, that whole thing. And then around the late 70s, early 80s, when, you know, ladies...
Women got liberated.
When they got liberated and said, I want to make your own damn sandwich. And, you know, moms were with the kids a lot more, and they people started seeing their moms as stronger people because, you know, you have that breadwinner wall taken away, and you realize mom can do just as much as dad can do, and it kind of grows from there. And I'm saying that because I grew up in that culture. So for me, that's how I felt. You know, I kind of felt like, well, mom does more than dad all the time, so I don't really know what the difference is. So I never had that in my head. And I wonder how many other people grew up that way, so maybe that's part of why that culture's changing too. Does that make sense to anybody, or is that just in my head?
Absolutely. Huh?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, totally in your head.
And ultimately, it comes down to what people are going to pay for and watch. And Tomb Raider made money, and people watched Alias and Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and they watched all these shows where women kicked ass. Continuum is a huge hit. You know, you've got all this stuff that continues to grow and grow and grow, and Ripley started it. Sarah Connor kind of added to it, but really it hasn't been popular until about the last 10 years.
And I think we hit a stride where girl power, and I don't mean that in a negative way whatsoever. I mean that in a positive way, became a popular thing. You had movies like Girl Fight and just movies that centered around even like Enough with
Jennifer Lopez.
Jennifer Lopez. Ooh. Where it's, you know, women taking a stand for and believing who they are kind of thing.
She just beat the snot out of that dude.
Yeah.
I actually like that. The movie was kind of dumb fun. Yeah. Well, historically, male heroes have been presented as a square-jawed, no-nonsense SOBs who save the world fully clothed, or they have their, like, you know, their gun show on full display. While women always have to be half-naked, running around, and emotional.
Their armor only comes to nipple, and then they're just bare.
Yeah, you got a guy who's basically in full camo, and she's got her boobs pushed up, and
I mean, there's always the occasional Conan, you know, where Arnold Schwarzenegger was pretty scantily clad in that one, but that's not the norm, no.
No, it's not, and it's a very unfair stereotype, I think. I'm not complaining. A lot of the times I enjoy it, I'm not saying that, but it is kind of an unfair stereotype. Do you think we're finally getting away from that, Brian?
Yeah, especially nowadays, I think we're seeing a lot of stereotypes, those walls being broken down, whether it's race, sexual preference, gender, you know, and it just, I think it's, they're all coming down. And in some ways, I mean, in a lot of ways, it's almost a necessity for Hollywood because it really opens up more material so they can hopefully have more original material. But something that really it's been around for a long time, though. I mean, more than just the last 10 years. I mean, you know, 90s, we saw a lot of, you know, a lot of strong female leads, or maybe not quite the lead, but maybe a strong character in it. I mean, and even now you've got like Extant. I think Halle Berry is a strong lead in that. I know she's over at the top at times, but I was compelled by her. I mean, you've even got on some of the smaller channels like TNT, you've got that Rizzoli and Isles, which is on its second or third season by now. You know, Kira Sedgwick had that show on their same channel that was 6 or 7 years running.
The Closer.
The Closer?
Yeah, they've had more and more lately. I mean, they had Cagney and Lacey in the 80s and stuff. They've had little hits here and there, but it's really prevalent now. I mean, it's prominent. It's all over the place.
Yeah, we're not really talking lead females. I think with this, we're talking more action females.
Action women.
And Cagney and Lacey, not take nothing away from them. They probably didn't kick a lot of ass.
No.
They probably chased it and then maybe shot it or whatever. But I don't know if they were chop socky in their way through the bad guys.
They weren't the A-team.
For a more recent example, look at Edge of Tomorrow that had Emily Blunt. She was in armor, full body armor, almost the entire movie. And she's a pretty girl. Mm-hmm. And there was never any... With her stripped down, she did do the little exercise thing on, I guess, didn't she? Mm-hmm. But for the majority of that movie, she was bulked up. I mean, she was fully covered.
Yeah, it had nothing to do with her sensuality or sexuality.
Right.
Yeah, and I guess I see it that I don't mind it so much in movies where the male heroes are wearing next. If they're wearing just as little clothes, okay. But if she's running around in stilettos and she's half naked and he's fully clothed, that irritates me. It actually kind of pisses me off. Because you know what's sexy to me is not doing all that. Like Emily Blunt, I found incredibly sexy.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was what I want somebody who's tough. Not just a tough woman. Somebody tough to be.
But see, then you
but
get...
See, sorry, real quick. But see, that's almost like hypocritical in a way to where she shouldn't be a sex object.
She's not a sex object.
No, I know she's not. I know she's not. I know she's not portrayed that way. But you said it. You find that sexy when she's not being sexy. So, therefore, she's a sex object. But, and it shouldn't be that way. She should just be another actor.
No, but see, that's my head.
And he finds her lack of being shown as a sex object to be in its own way appealing.
Thank you.
It's the whole thing of like. Is a naked woman as sexy as a woman in a bikini? I don't know, because of the bikini, it's that mystery that creates sometimes more sensuality than just the naked truth of who someone is. Is that maybe what you're kind of talking about?
Yes.
But, you know, when you look at the Avengers and say, look at Black Widow, for the most part, that outfit is not a very sexy outfit. I mean, I don't think her butt would look terrible, even if she's just wearing a burlap sack.
Mm-mm.
But it's not a scanty outfit. It's not, to me, it's not a sexy outfit. It's a utilitarian outfit that she wears. And that's great. I'm really glad that she's not being put out there as a pinup doll. But let's not take away, though, say like Ava Green in 300 Rise of an Empire. There are moments in that movie where she is incredibly sexy, but I think that's she's using her appeal that men just almost can't help but fall under as a tool and as a weapon against men. And so she's using her sexuality in a way that makes her even fucking stronger and more powerful of a character.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes sex can really work for a heroine, but I am glad that we're shifting to a day that it's the exception and more the rule.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure Wonder Woman and the upcoming Batman versus Superman is not going to look like Wonder Woman that Linda Carter played, you know, back in the 70s. Granted, she looked great, but that age is done, and I'm glad for that.
I am too. Now, let's get into the actresses we like and don't like. What actress, first of all, do you think has been the worst to attempt being an action heroine?
Well, we already mentioned her, but Halle Berry as Catwoman.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Oh, shit. You went there.
And Storm, for that matter.
Oh, yeah. Man. But at least it's Storm. It was more her acting that was bad.
Right.
She was just bad at action. And
that. I mean, Catwoman is universally known as one of a really terrible film anyway, but...
It's fun if you're drunk, man.
It's just painful saying. To watch. There's like a scene where she's playing basketball with some dude and... it's terrible. But to me, the character Catwoman, at least from what I had seen from the old television shows and the movies, and Catwoman was always sexy.
But see, that's part of her character. Yeah, I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with that too, but I don't know, the way that they did it in the movie, like she was obviously more revealing and like had rips in her leather and that kind of stuff.
There's no reason for cleavage.
Yeah. there really wasn't. And it just really, really bothered me. And I could not stand her in that movie.
Okay. Well, my pick is Drew Barrymore in Charlie's Angels. Now, don't get me wrong. I like Charlie's Angels. I actually like the movie. And Sam, what's his name? Sam
Rockwell.
Rockwell was so good in that movie. And I actually think Cameron Diaz was great in that movie, too. But Drew Barrymore, I'm convinced the only reason she got that job was because she produced it. Because she does not look good in a fight. She looks ridiculous. She looks like she's lost, and she's having a spat on a playground or something. It looks horrible, and stop it. Just stop it.
It's a good call.
Brian?
I can't believe nobody's mentioned this. Pamela Anderson.
Barbed wire.
Exactly.
Oh, shit.
Oh, this is so bad.
If you haven't seen it, this is the actual description from IMDb. And I quote, post-apocalyptic remake of Casablanca set in a strip club. That should say it all right.
Sounds about right. Yeah, I like it.
Interesting little... one of the actors in there, one of the supporting actors, was Jango Fett from the newer Star Wars movies.
Oh, wow. Hmm. Okay.
I do have to say, though, she was married to Tommy Lee
when
she did this movie. And he did a song for that movie called Welcome to Planet Boom. That's a kick-ass song.
It's too bad it was in such a kick-ass
movie. It was a
movie.
Shit film, but that was a kick-ass song.
Awful movie. What about you, Justin? What do you got?
I'm doubling down on you. To me, it's a tie with Drew Barrymore and Cameron Diaz. The action that they tried to create in those Charlie's Angels movies was terrible. At least Lucy Liu looked believable.
She did.
She was the one angel that I could go, all right, yeah, she's probably kicking some ass. Those other two
Because she's Asian,
because
she can pull off
knows
the
martial arts.
Yeah, she actually kicks somebody's ass.
She actually knows it.
She didn't look like, wait, what do? So I turn, twirl here.
Where's my cleavage? Where's the camera playing?
She looks
talk about sexualizing your female characters.
Oh, Lord.
I mean, they were nothing but cleavage and butt in that movie. Both of them, actually. But they were terrible at action. Thank God I don't think either of them have tried it again. I think as close as Cameron Diaz has gotten was that Night and Day
where she just,
movie. But she was not even an action element of it. She was the damsel.
She was a set piece, really. Right. It's like, here, Cruz, move her around the room and then do what you got to do.
Yeah, really so McGee, woof.
Oh, man. You know, the first one was actually kind of a fun movie, but the action was just not good. Some people just don't belong there.
All right, we got another request from listener Michael Pippett. He wanted us to bring back the episode. He says, that time where Scott was on a roll, kept making digs about his university degree. Funniest episode ever. No idea what episode, though. Sorry. I'm glad you like that, Michael, because I don't have too many funny moments, and I kind of feel proud about that episode. So
yeah, whatever. So we're going to play it just because he asked for it, but...
I had nothing to do with it.
Yeah? You just got all the degrees. I didn't get any of the things he's talking about, but we're going to play little pieces of it, because we're not going to play that whole episode. I mean, seriously, his ego is big enough. So here you go. Here's a little snippet.
I think I'm in the minority of people that don't really care to see a sequel to Zombieland. I love Zombieland, but I've said it on the show before, I'm getting kind of tired of zombies. Brian, I know you're not. You could probably have every movie be zombies and probably be happy.
He wishes Atlanta was actually a zombie farm.
Yeah.
But to me, that formula, the comedy and the double tap and the words on the screen, that seems like a one and done kind of thing for me. I think doing anything else is going to be oversaturation. As much as I love the first one, no fault, I don't have any problem with it. I just don't see it working twice.
I can kind of go with that.
Oh, you're agreeing with Scott. Hang on.
Well, I'm agreeing that the idea of using some of the aspects of the first film that were so unusual and interesting, like putting those words on the screen, the whole idea of the character kind of giving you instructions and how they do what they do. That worked so well in the first film, but I think if you did it again, it would come off like, oh, I'm just going to ape the first one, and it would have none of that original feel. They would have to do something completely different, and then at that point, why the hell call it Zombieland? Call it, I don't know, Frackin' Zombie World.
I just want to point out how Justin is notorious for not agreeing with Scott. Then in the moment where he almost agreed with Scott, he found a way to make himself not agree with Scott.
I overall agree with Scott, yes. I will give him the agreement.
Now let's go to Brian's trailer.
Whoa.
Oh, what?
Before you go on, I have just seen the saddest thing I ever saw. You want to know what it is?
A mirror?
That's your pants.
Brian. It is a white poofy dog.
What?
In a pink I'm a ho sweater.
Yep.
Who the fuck got a pink I'm a ho sweater for their dog? Aaron, would you like to illuminate?
I don't know, but I bet they're handsome.
Oh my god, you're a puss.
It's a really
Everybody
good...
go to the Hollywood Outsider. Well, actually, Scott, I think you – did you put it on your wall or on the wall?
Facebook group.
I posted on the Facebook
Go to the
group.
Facebook wall, look at this picture, and then please ridicule Aaron or bathe in the cuteness of this dog in a pink sweater.
It's in the whole group. It's not on the Facebook page. It's in the group. Apparently, that it confuses the shit out of Brian. So
me too, Brian. Brian, we're together. Hey. Why the fuck we got two different pages?
I don't know.
Facebook
Aaron
algorithm.
Is such a Nazi tyrant.
We don't have two Facebook pages. We have a Facebook
page. I never
page
realized
and we have a
what
Facebook
I'm
group.
Typing under until
I'm telling. Yeah.
Until I've already hit send and I got to. Oh crap!
And then I get text from Aaron. You should have put that in the other page. Thanks.
I didn't get any instructions. I figured it out pretty well.
Ooh.
You can leave. You can
anyway,
leave
anyway. I just saw that picture and I'm like, what the F?
Apparently us younger people get technology a little bit better.
Oh, God. Man, he's got you.
Use the technology before you were
twice.
Born.
He got you twice in 3 minutes.
You, son, need to put those balls away.
They're not big enough for this. Nope. All right, next film. Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day. Ugh. It sounds like one of my days. Mm-hmm. This one is directed by Miguel Arteta, and it stars Steve Carell, Jennifer Garner. I think that's those are the two names that if anyone's going to draw you into the theater, it's going to have to be Carell or Garner. Alexander's Day, which we hear is kind of bad, begins with the gum stick in his with gum stuck in his hair, followed by more calamities. Though he finds little sympathy from his family and begins to wonder if bad things only happen to him, his mom, dad, brother, and sister all find themselves living through their own terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day.
Oh, Lord.
Scotty, this sounds like your childhood. Please, is this something you're wanting to go out to a theater and check out?
Well, I don't know if you guys are familiar. This is actually based on a very popular children's book, like lower elementary. We've actually used this in college and prep for me being a teacher quite a bit. The movie.
What kind of college did you go to that you were reading
children's
kindergarten
books?
Level books?
You have to learn how.
It's an accelerated program.
Hey, if you're gonna read these to the kids, you got to read it first yourself.
Was it a pop up book?
Oh my god!
Did you minor in coloring between the lines?
I'm a minor in crayon.
How are your guys' bachelor's degrees doing?
Ooh.
I don't even have a degree.
Touche. I think that was kind of his point. Touche, sir. And we're back. And here's another one that was requested. Again, D.A. Cheney. She wanted to hear the one where Brian talks about what he would do to a haunted doll. Remember that Annabelle?
Oh,
remember
Chucky? That? Chucky?
Yeah, like all the evil things that he would do, like if there's a demon doll in his house.
I do remember
we were talking
that.
About Annabelle. So here we go. We're going to play that back for you. This is Brian at one of his finer moments. And that was a dramatic pause in honor of Brian. Here's a clip. If they added a holodeck, would you want to go see it?
No, because then it would just fuck up the reality. It's going to be real.
Flare?
Be real.
What about lens flares?
Oh, fuck yes. I mean, no movie can go wrong.
Calm down, F-bomb. Jeez, all right, man. I feel like
next
I'm at Eddie Murphy
fucking
concert.
Left behind. As Aaron was mentioning earlier, this is a remake of the highly acclaimed Kirk Cameron film, which is itself an adaptation of a book. I think Tim LaHaye is the author of the books, but they are doing this remake. A small group of survivors are left behind after millions of people suddenly vanish and the world is plunged into chaos and destruction. This one does star Nicolas Cage and Leah Thompson.
Oh, Back to the Future?
Leah Thompson, yes, of Back to the Future fame. So,
holy crap, I didn't know that.
yeah, so be ready to check that one. Oh, and it also stars Chad Michael Murray.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Chad Michael Murray. Yep.
So let's go ahead and use that to tamp down any anticipation you might have.
Just buried it.
Brian, how interested are you to see Left Behind, or would you just rather be left behind?
I would just rather be left behind. This series was huge, what, probably 15 years ago?
Yeah, amongst the Walmart reader fans, this was a huge
easy,
hit.
Easy.
I'm sorry.
Easy. Well, yeah. Look, you don't judge. You like to be, you know, give everybody, be nice to everybody, love everybody,
right.
No bullying. So
that's right. I'm a hippie. Love everybody.
Be nice.
Unless they like the Jesus, apparently.
But yeah, you're right. It is a very popular Christian book that deals with the people that are left behind after the rapture.
Yep.
My guess is there, like we kind of talked about last week or the week before, where this seems to be one of the more popular themes lately. They could just be kind of just trying to drum up more money. It's kind of the way I see it. And the cast does not grab me at all. So I have no interest in this.
If they're going to cater to Christians, I'm Christian. Make better movies. That would be fine. You don't have to make movies that look, you don't remake Kirk Cameron movies for any reason.
I want to see it.
Oh, wow. You just got real defensive.
I want to see it. I don't think it looks terrible, and I don't think calling it a remake of the Kirk Cameron movie. Is it based off of the original book?
Mm-hmm.
This movie is based off of the book that the old book was.
Correct.
Okay. Okay, fair enough. There's your phrase. Sure, it's kind of hard to take Nick Cage seriously, and we're going to talk about that later too. But to me, the difference between this movie and what I saw of the previous one, especially with Kirk Cameron's involvement, who's like hardcore conservative Christian, is that that movie had a message behind it.
True.
And this one doesn't appear to have any message at all in the trailer. Mm-hmm. And to me, that proves that you can make a film based on a religious idea or a religious concept without it being preachy. Because I don't get that at all in this. They mention God a couple times.
I absolutely agree with that. I don't see the theme of Christianity behind this. Mm-hmm. I see it as it's a movie.
I see it as a disaster film, and you know how I feel about that. So I'm going to see it.
Well, I can't, though, separate it from its source material.
You could.
Even if the movie doesn't say it's a Christian film, the source material very much is. So to me, they're inextricably entwined. Now, does that mean that I don't want to see it because it's a Christian movie? No, not really. I don't want to
see it. Sounds like it.
Well, I don't want to see it, one, because I'm sick to death of the fucking rapture. This is like the third movie. They got The Leftovers. They're already out there. It's a played out idea for now. Let it at least cool off a bit before we do yet another rapture story. And two, this just
spaceships and giant creature lizards hasn't been done at all.
Because that's a genre; it's not a specific story type.
Give him his props.
So biblical stories and stuff is not a genre. Okay.
No,
or no. Well, I'm just
there's
trying
genre,
to find the rules
and if
out.
You want to go the Christian route to it, now if you want to take if you want to take it as just an apocalyptic story, that's fine, but. It's not. It does have a specific aim. That doesn't bother me. The Nick Cage aspect of it is what kind of bothers me because he looks like shit in it. And yes, the fact that Kirk Cameron did do a version of this earlier does also kind of tweak my nose a little bit because I can't stand him for reasons that are probably really based. So, yes.
I want to get some popcorn and just let you and Brian go at it because this is the most entertaining one I've had in a while.
I just see hypocrite. That's all. I just see
that's
a big
because
old
you want to see a hypocrite. And not because
see,
it actually exists.
Preaching one
then
thing.
You might as well say that
another.
They shouldn't do kaiju movies because Godzilla exists or something.
I think we just developed a new word, hypocrite.
That's actually pretty good.
Hashtag hypocrite. Make it happen, people.
What else do we have?
Oh. That wore me out. All right.
You're welcome.
One more fucking movie. Annabelle. For those of you who didn't get enough of this creepy-ass doll from The Conjuring, here comes a whole movie about that little wooden bitch. Directed by John Leonetti and starring Ward Harton and Annabelle Willis. But, I'm kind of confused why the two characters from The Conjuring Well, then again, they came in afterwards. Okay, I've kind of answered my own question. Hello. A couple begin to experience terrifying supernatural occurrences involving a vintage doll shortly after their home is invaded by satanic cultists, which really, does it get any worse invading than satanic cultists?
Nope.
No, they always want to shit on the
only
parade.
I guess if you're Kirk Cameron. Apparently you're okay with you're okay with devil stuff, but you're not okay with God stuff. Hypocrite.
I would probably have the devil in my house before Jesus. Yes, probably so. Because at least the devil.
Well, I've got no doubt. I think the devil actually sits on your couch occasionally.
He's me, motherfucker. I'm possessed. Scotty,
I'm in tears.
You are of a distinct Christian origin.
He said you stink.
Does the story of Annabelle make you want to go into a theater?
It really does. I feel like it's been a forever since I've gone to the theater and got creeped out. And I know we're coming up on Halloween season, so this trailer, I keep seeing them on TV now. Now they got cable again. I keep seeing this trailer, multiple different ones, and it gets creepier and creepier every time I see it.
Did you just say you got cable again?
Yeah.
He talked about it like a week or two ago. You should listen
did
when he?
He
talks.
How long did that last?
Since football season.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Football season started back up. That's right.
Yeah. How they make just an inanimate object so damn creepy is even in a trailer. It reminds me of remember Poltergeist, the original Poltergeist.
Yes, I do.
Remember that clown in the corner of the bedroom, whatever, the clown doll.
Mm-hmm.
It gives me that vibe of like just something creepy staring at you. But this one's even more jacked up. I want to see it. I think it looks awesome. I kind of want to go back and see The Conjuring again too. Just to get
could you guys see what's that Marlon Wayans movie Haunted House 2?
I didn't see the second one. I only saw the first one.
Oh shit! There's this whole extended scene where he and this Annabelle like doll, he's just raping the hell out of it. It is so fucking hysterical.
Okay.
I mean, him and this doll go to town.
All right. Got a problem with angels? You're okay with doll raping?
Hey, you want to talk about angels?
All right.
I am of the mindset. I've seen this trailer several times, and every time I see it, I want to see the movie a little less.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's one of those things where I love the doll in the movie, but I just don't see how the doll is going to create an entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't creep me out enough to sustain my terror for 90 minutes. And also, I'm not a big fan of possessed doll movies. So,
well, it worries me that it looks like it's going to be one of those movies where the probably two or three signature scare scenes, by the time you see the movie, you'll have seen it in the trailer probably 12 times, mm-hmm. and it won't be. You'll know it's coming, and you won't jump. If the only reason you jump is because somebody close by to you hasn't seen it near as much as you have, so they're actually shocked a little bit.
Well, I've been purposely avoiding the trailer recently on this one. I think I watched the first two, but then after that, I've tried to avoid them because I don't want all those good scare moments spoiled in those trailers. I think it looks really creepy, and I like that the doll is going to be an inanimate object rather than, you know, going the full Chucky and suddenly it's, you know, head spinning and it's dancing around. I think because it does not move makes it even scarier because it doesn't have to. It's all in the things that it can do outside of that wooden little figure that make it so scary, plus the cult around it. I'm really, really, really looking forward to seeing this.
All I want to say is whenever I see a possessed doll movie, the entire movie, all I think was pick it up and throw it in the garbage, light it on fire, do something. They always wait until the last 5 minutes when it's obviously already taken over the entire neighborhood before they bother doing any of that.
Marlo Wayans tries to do that. It doesn't work out well for him.
Let me just tell you, if I see blood coming out of a doll's eye, I don't wipe the blood off and put her back on the shelf. I light that bitch on fire.
One of two things has happened. It's going or I'm going.
Exactly.
Well, who brings that fucking doll into their house in the first place?
Yeah, it's not cute.
No.
No, not
if
even.
If it's in the trash looking like that, it's for a reason, folks.
If it's at the store looking like that, I wouldn't buy it.
No.
Just like Chucky. Chucky. I would never have bought this fucking doll for my kid either.
It's a scary doll. It's a scary looking doll.
It looks creepy as hell. I want a Chucky doll. No, you don't, you little sick bastard. You're not getting one of those.
Look, it's real easy to get rid of these things. I don't know why we've got to watch an hour and a half movie to people being scared of this. it obviously doesn't bother you when you're just doing everyday chores. You're cleaning the house. You know, you're in a room. You're dusting the furniture, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't do anything. It might close a door in another room to make you spooked a little bit, but that's fine. So when you realize, hey, this doll is jacked up and it's causing some spooky shit, you just go in there like you're every day, like you're just dusting the room again, and then you grab it, and then you just say, oh, hey, yeah, I'm just going to go, let's put this in here while I clean this other stuff. And then you just, you trick it into thinking you're just doing daily chores. In the meantime, you go have a fire ready, and you just go toss it out in the yard.
You've really thought about this a lot.
You've got a very, very thought out plan.
I want to back up a second. Justin, are you saying Marlo Wayans?
Marlon.
I swear it sounded like you said Marlo.
I thought he lost
the name. I don't know what you're listening to.
You're giving him an offer he can't refuse.
Y'all done?
Yep, we're done.
All right.
I hope you guys liked the episode. This is a request from David Chrismore, or Chrismore. I assume it's Chrismore. We're going to go with Chrismore, but you know I like to screw names up. That's what I do. He wanted to hear Dystopian Heroes. Now, that's from episode 166, where we talk about what kind of heroes would we want to avoid in the apocalypse, as well as who are the best ones we've seen thus far. I thought this is a really interesting subject and topic, and that's what David requested, so here it is. Dystopian Heroes. This week, it's Dystopian Heroes. Not apocalyptic heroes, Justin. Dystopian Heroes.
Gotcha.
All right. Well, let's face it, we're all eventually going to be living in some kind of dystopian world where we have to fight to survive and everything is against us. The world is falling apart, blah, 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 blah. But first, we have to collapse as a society. So I ask you guys, what movie or TV series, before we get to our heroes and who we want to help us get out of this nightmare, which dystopian scenario is the one you foresee is the most plausible and why?
Well, my inspiration for this answer was actually Mad Max. Mm-hmm. And then the more I kind of thought about it, was it actually kind of ties into the TV show Revolution.
The recently canceled?
The recently canceled Revolution, yeah. With Mad Max, a lot of people, all they remember is, you know, him running around, just wandering around the desert and all these kind of rural areas and that kind of stuff. But what they may not remember is what caused this dystopian type thing.
Yeah, I really don't remember.
An energy. It was actually like an energy crisis. And now while your major cities were for the most part okay, your more rural areas.
Say that again. Rural?
Rural, Shaggy.
Rut-row.
So those more or less populated areas. They had a lot more struggles going on. So you had a lot more bands of, you know, rebels and that kind of stuff. But you also had, you know, this military type force that was going around. Basically, there was a very thin line between doling out their own type of justice and, you know, what was actually the law. So like I said, Mad Max is kind of what, it, you know, I would see as an inspiration there. Basically, it's a big energy crisis that kind of shuts down a lot of the country and or the world. So
that's a good point. I could absolutely see that.
Yeah. I mean, look at California. Just, I mean, you know, everything starts in, you know, seems like, you know, start in California and work its way, you know, east.
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, you got in California, you've got these rolling blackouts that happen occurring, you know, every so often. And so not saying it's going to happen next year, just saying.
Not saying
it's not. The potential is there.
What about you, Justin? What's your nightmare scenario possibility?
Some people may think I'm taking the piss on this one or something, but I'm totally serious. Sadly, Idiocracy is where I see us going. I mean, we don't teach to educate anymore. We teach just so people can pass a fucking test.
Explain what Idiocracy, because a lot of people haven't seen it.
Idiocracy is a movie. It's a comedy written by and directed by Mike Judge. And it's about this idiot guy who signs up to be a lab rat in this cryogenic experiment. Things, of course, go awry in like the Futurama kind of way. All of a sudden, instead of it being 5 years, it turns into like 100 years or something. And when their cryotubes open up, they awaken to a world that is filled with and run by idiots. I mean, just the entirety of humanity has now become just a little above retard in their ability to think and reason. Oh. And sadly, I think that's a direction we could be headed. Because like I was saying, teachers don't teach to educate children anymore or to create critical thinkers. They teach to a test. That test having nothing really to do with critical thinking or educating children. We revile people who are intelligent, and we call them professorial or other kinds of words that should be good, but they're not because of the way they're said. Because for some reason, people now want to scorn those who are highly intelligent. We watch nothing but Snookies and Real Housewives of and all these other stupid shows. We venerate the ignorant, and it is so rare for someone like a Neil deGrasse Tyson to get celebrated because we're too busy shoving our heads up Kim Kardashian's ample bottom.
Well, in all fairness, I can relate. I can understand the allure of her ample bottom a lot more than I can understand what Neil deGrasse Tyson is talking about when he's talking at his level and not in the Idiocracy level where I'm at.
Luckily, you know, we can get the Kim Kardashian ass, but then we can watch Cosmos. We can get some easily understandable and digestible information from Neil deGrasse Tyson and come away smarter than we were going in. But that just doesn't seem to interest most people. And it really saddens me that intellect and education has become what it is, and that our society seems to just love celebrating the least of us.
Yeah, we keep dumbing things down.
We do.
To make it easier.
Everything is getting dumber and dumber. And it would not surprise me if one day we're all just walking around with mullets, pressing buttons for electrolytes.
What are you trying to say? Mullets equal idiocy?
Mullets do not make you dumber.
They don't make you dumber, but they can help you point out who might be.
Okay, look, I can't argue that too deeply, but...
No, you can't.
That's a very bad stereotype. That's likely correct. But anyway...
The one thing I will tell you about, to your point, is that, you know, I've got two kids and they went through school. And I remember going to class, both my kids actually, when they were younger, and they required calculators, which I hate. I absolutely hate that idea that you require a calculator, because they basically stop teaching kids how to actually work out and formulate problems in their head or on paper. So now kids can only do these math problems with a calculator. And that just boggles my frickin' mind. I don't even understand that. And it's like, well, they're learning. What are they learning? They don't learn anything with that.
Well, you know, and sadly, I've fallen into it too, where I it's hard for me to retain information anymore. At least it feels that way. So instead of trying to learn it, memorize it, keep it in my brain, I just go to Google, go to Wikipedia. You know, I don't learn information. I just repeat by rote shit I find on the internet, and I can't help but think that that's adding to our idiocy. There you go.
How many people could find their way to a town away from their current town without Google or without MapQuest?
Yeah, I mean, pull out a Rand McNally map and get your ass there.
Yep,
we could.
Yeah, we could. Because we're older.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Dang, I thought I was cool.
No. But to be fair, Brian, you'd be looking at your phone the whole time. You're not fooling anybody. You just download the direction.
I don't have a whole lot, but I've got a fantastic sense of direction.
That way,
I may get you lost, but I will get you found too.
Yeah, but all it does is lead you to Krispy Kreme
and Starbucks.
Oh, I love
what
Starbucks.
What about you, Aaron?
Honestly, those are both good ideas. Mine would be the Terminator, and I know that's somewhere in the gray area, but Terminator is probably the one I actually think it's gonna happen.
The robots are going to overtake us?
Absolutely.
Hey, man.
Absolutely. I think technology is going to, at some point, put us in a box because we're making it so much smarter, like kind of what you're talking about. We're making machines smarter than we'll ever be, which is great. It helps us out a lot. But at some point, because we keep giving them AI and more advanced AI, at some point, I got a feeling some dude that looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to come up and tell me exactly where to stand.
And if you don't stand there, it's your ass.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't want that life, but I see it coming. and we'll all be dumb and being told where to go by the robots. And we won't have electricity either, because the robots will suck it all up. So all three of ours are going to combine into one giant, awful nightmare.
And they're just running a bunch of idiots.
Now, we're going to need a leader, and there are a lot of people to consider for the job, but we should rule at least one person. Who is the one person that you never want in charge of your dystopian nightmare? Because, you know, if there's one person to lead us all, who's the one guy or gal that you say, there's no way in heck I'm following him? My personal choice would be Snake Plissken.
What?
No, let me finish. I love Snake. He's one of my favorite movie characters of all.
You wouldn't follow Kurt Russell into hell itself?
He would leave me the first chance he got. The first chance he got. Because he would leave my ass in a New York minute, so to speak. He doesn't give one damn about me, my sculpted hide. He doesn't care about anything except him getting his ass to freedom. And did you see Escape?
Sculpted hide.
That's right.
Really?
Did you see Escape from L.A. at the end? He started the world over. He didn't care. He's like, fuck it. Let's start over. That's not a guy I want to follow. Mm-mm. That's a guy we got to lock in a box and make sure he never comes out. What about you, Brian?
Wow. I'm just kind of in shock there. Definitely a great point. Gosh, I've got to go with Kevin Costner in Waterworld.
Just because he's Kevin Costner or for a reason?
Because he's got gills. I mean, it's kind of the same concept as gills. Like, he's just going to leave you. He didn't really, honestly, until like the last 20 minutes of the movie, and that was a very long movie, he didn't give a shit about anybody.
That's true.
You know, it was like, look, all right, I'm stuck with this chick and her kid, and oh my God, I got all this female drama going on.
All I'll do is drink my piss.
How deep into the ocean can I dive and, you know, and just get away from these bitches? So, you know, and he was, you know, quote unquote, doing something good. And this is coming from, I actually am one of the four people, I think Justin's one of the other four people also that actually kind of liked it.
Oh, yeah, I love that movie.
So, and this is coming from a fan. So, yeah, I mean, I'm very open about my love for Kevin Costner. But again, it's just somebody that...
He's selfish.
I don't want him on my team at all. I want somebody that I know that I can depend on.
Absolutely. Justin?
Who's your guy? Or female?
I'm going with Douglas Quaid from the Arnold Schwarzenegger Total Recall. I mean, the guy was so stupid, he couldn't even tell if that condescending asshole was lying to him until he saw that bead of sweat. And then there's the clue. Oh, he's really here. I mean, he didn't know who he was for more than half the movie.
That's really a good point.
And then he's shoving shit up his nose just to pull it out later? No. Douglas Quaid, I am sorry, but you are the weakest link.
But if you follow him, he might die, and he's got a hot wife.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Mm-hmm. That's true. He did have a very hot Sharon Stone.
Mm-hmm. She had a couple of hot chicks in that movie. So.
Oh, Sharon Stone in the 80s is the definition of hot. Right? Am I wrong?
Well, she was hot, and she was tough. And,
mm-hmm. Yeah, and early 90s, sure.
Oh, yeah, 90s, too. I mean, when she's crossing her leg. Yeah, that was a good movie. I got to go watch Basic Instinct when we're done.
Yep.
Okay, now we don't have to worry about them. Those are the people that we're leaving behind because they obviously will get us killed. So who's your choice for the chosen one? That one person, not necessarily the one, but that one person you want leading you through this dystopian wasteland?
You know, for me, I've got to go with my heart, and I'm going with Captain Malcolm Reynolds.
Really? Out of everybody?
He is just, he's always got a fantastic quip. He's got a great ship. He's got a Nara on that ship.
That's true.
He's surrounded by quality people. Sure, you may die in one of the adventures. You may get a spike through your chest when you think you're home safe. But I love that character from both television and film. If there's anybody that I thought could get me through a scrape, it's Malcolm Reynolds.
Yeah, Wash thought that too.
Well, yeah.
Like a leaf on the wind.
A sword.
Brian?
Yeah, I've got to go with Denzel Washington's character, you know, from the Book of Eli.
Oh, yeah.
God, I mean, he was just... the ending and its revelation?
No.
It's been
no.
out for a couple of years, so... You got
I'm not going. I mean, there's that's not an important fact in this. You
know? He's Daredevil in the future. How's
he's
that?
He's not handicapped. He's handicapable.
He is.
I mean, the dude is like very smart. He's very savvy with the way the world is, but yet he's also has that sense of importance of, hey, there's something more than just me going on here. And to your point about the ending, you see eventually what this bigger thing is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and he's somebody that just, look, you just tell me where to be, what to do, and I'll do it. I trust you. I trust you enough to where you know more about what the hell's going on than I do. If these, you know, I think, hey, there's a group of people and I'm willing to go say, hey, join us here at the fire and share our rabbit and goat meat. Then, and you say, nope, we better kill him. Then you know what? I'm not even going to give him a chance. I'm just going to kill him.
Jesus. Because
he knows, he's all savvy with that, all that stuff, way more than I am. So
that was a real descriptive story, Brian. And a little awkward.
I thought about it.
You sure did. My pick is Will Smith's Robert Neville from I Am Legend. I think he's the one. I mean, he managed to remain the only guy alive on a planet for a while, or at least think he was. He's smart. He's tough. He's one of the few people in a dystopian world, I think, to actually try to figure out a solution to the problem as opposed to just dealing with it and looking for water. Hell, I think he makes educated plans. I think he would actually make a plan. I don't want to, like, I respect Malcolm Reynolds. I love Malcolm Reynolds, but he doesn't really make a, he's like, ah, shit, let's go left. That's the plan. I want somebody that's got a plan. So I would go with him. More leaders that are trying to find solutions than trying to start a war. Think. That's what I want. Okay. And here's our last segment that we're going to talk about. Jonathan Spear once again asked for this. 154 was the episode. 154. We talked about the greatest directors. Our picks for who we thought were the greatest directors.
That was a pretty varied. We all had lots of different picks, if I remember correctly.
It was, and I think it was extremely well done. It was very interesting. It was very controversial, I think, to a degree. But mm-hmm. we had a nice conversation without punching anybody in the face.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of our most popular ones throughout the year. Did you know our most popular episodes were the love episode? That was number one.
Really?
And the monologue episode,
huh?
Which was on the first Best of Ho, Volume 1.
Wow.
So go find that, yeah.
Okay.
People liked when we were shouting at the microphone.
Interesting. Hey. People love controversy.
People like controversy, man. So here you go. Here's our choices and our conversation on The Greatest Director, episode 154. Here you go. From the outside in, now we're going to the topic of the week. Who is the greatest working director? Each week, we talk about what our favorite movies are. We debate the merits of various talents among our varying tastes. But ultimately, some films are great, some are good, some are not close to either of those two things. But one thing is constant, the director is always the guy or gal. The director is always the person responsible for all of it. So this week, no top three, no honorable mentions, nothing like that. We're just going to state our case individually for who is our favorite working director and why. Scotty, who is your favorite director and why?
My favorite working director right now is Christopher Nolan. The first movie I ever saw of his was Memento, and I loved how that movie made my brain work in a way that was completely different and just warped it and made it go haywire. Since then, he's taken comic book franchises that I would have otherwise dismissed and made them feel like they could actually take place in reality. And to me, that was a big thing because I, as you guys know, I've been tapped out on.
Yeah, you don't like comics. You don't love them like.
I love them like you guys do. But I didn't. To be fair, I didn't grow up with the comics like you guys did, so I don't have the nostalgia. I don't have the grown up love with it. And the way that he did the Dark Knight series and even Superman was like.
Well, he didn't direct Superman, so he just produced it.
You're right. That's okay, but it was specifically with the Dark Knight series. I could see that all of that happening. I mean, all of that stuff, there wasn't anything kind of supernatural. There were no superpowers. I could see that happening. On top of that, he continues to make films that make me think. Obviously, you guys know my love for Inception, and the upcoming Interstellar looks like it's going to be kind of bending your brain a little bit. I can safely say that I'll see anything he makes that has his name attached to it from here on out. So that's my pick.
What do you guys think? You think Christopher Nolan is definitely in the mix? In the conversation,
he's definitely in the discussion. He's bringing a fresh kind of a fresh run of movies that, like, say, it's something a little bit different. And, like, every now and then, I don't mind thinking. And any movie that you walk out of where you kind of scratch your head and you're not really sure, you're on the drive home, you're debating how, like, Inception, like, you know, what did you get from the ending? Because I got this, and no, and this and that. No, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that's a sign of a good movie. And that's a really good call. He's definitely in the conversation.
When you have people fighting over if they heard something after the screen goes to black, I think that's pretty well done. I gotta admit, that's pretty well done. Justin, you're way too quiet. You're not a fan of the Nolan choice?
No, I love Nolan. I think that between Memento and Inception, you know, those two films alone are enough to, I think, elevate him above most directors. But then you add in what he was able to do with The Dark Knight, and it's really incredible that he was able to bring such grittiness and realism to a franchise that is just so not that. But he did, and now with Interstellar coming up and what I've seen from the trailers, it looks outstanding. He's just a director that is not content to make just a regular movie. He wants to make something that's got heart and that has passion all through it. And I respect that more than just about anything. He's a fantastic director, and he's certainly, I think, currently working. He's in the very top tier.
I don't think he gets enough credit for Insomnia.
I never saw it.
Really? You never saw that one?
The Robin Williams?
Yeah, Robin Williams and Al Pacino movie. Yeah. I never did. It's such a great little thriller. It's very understated. It's very quiet. And Pacino's performance in it is actually pretty stellar, especially since that was his screaming phase and he didn't scream.
Right.
So definitely one I think people should. Good pick. My pick is Quentin Tarantino. There's only one director I can think of currently that I absolutely have to see every single thing he does the day it comes out. And I think there's a lot of great visual directors out there. But Tarantino is the only one. See, I wasn't going to get an honorable mention. I'm covering all of them. But Tarantino is the only one to me whose look is so distinct that you could spend 5 minutes in a theater, in a seat, and you know exactly who's running the show. You know who's in charge. His writing to me has always been stellar. Even True Romance, which I don't think was the best directed movie because he didn't direct it.
No, it was Tony Scott,
yeah,
right?
It was Tony Scott, yep. But it had moments of greatness. And ever since Reservoir Dogs, where he took such a chance with that movie. That movie is – people look at it now and they're like, wow, that's been done 1,000 times. It got done 1,000 times because of Reservoir Dogs. You know, at that time, that movie moved so slow. And it got so much flack because it moved so slow, and it was so much talking for a crime drama. You know, there's really very little violence in the movie. Other than the ear, which everybody thinks it's horribly violent, it's just really the ear and Tim Roth's bloody shootout. That's really it. There's really not been any director who's disappointed me less than him. His films just simply do not release to me. They become classics like as soon as they come out. They become movies that everybody has to talk about. Other filmmakers have to talk about. He pulls performances from actors you either do not know or barely remember were alive, really. I mean, he made a star out of Michael Madsen, and Michael Madsen kind of has one shtick. And for some reason, that shtick only works in Tarantino movies. I love Madsen, but I only really love Madsen in Michael or Quentin Tarantino movies. So that's something that I love about him.
Well, And also with Tarantino, he's one of those guys that people copy and they mimic his style. I mean, he did that jumpy timeline thing that where back and forth stuff that
non-linear.
People have copied ever since.
He absolutely did.
The non-linear stuff.
Yeah. To be fair, people will say, well, he rips off other filmmakers. You know what? He does mimic or use those influences in his film, not going to argue that, but he takes them and makes them his own. So as far as I'm concerned, that's not copying, that's paying homage and improving upon.
Well, I was just going to say, I would never say that he rips off anyone, because usually if he's going to take someone else's film style and then apply it to what he does, he always tries to elevate it and show, you know, not only not why he liked it, but why he's using it. It's always an homage. It's never a ripoff. I've never thought that once about him.
Earlier you mentioned that you can walk into a Tarantino movie not knowing it's him and just look at it and see it visually that mm-hmm. it's him. I think I could do the same thing if it were a Tarantino movie that I hadn't seen and I just listened to the audio the without score, seeing the picture. Yeah. Well, not even the score, but just the dialogue. His dialogue and the way that his characters – and I know that's a tribute to the writing, not necessarily the directing – is so distinct in him. Mm-hmm. Like just the way that the characters talk to each other and sometimes conversations about nothing – but
always conversations about nothing.
But they're entertaining.
Foot massages are fantastic to listen to. You got a guy in a box dressed in leather for – it makes no sense to anybody in the world, but for some reason you buy it. I mean, just all those crazy inventions. And he made slavery cool somehow or whatever the hell that was. I mean, people were not – nobody bashed it for misrepresenting – you know, whenever you make a movie about slavery, people are worried about the realism. There's zero realism in that movie. In Django mm-hmm. Unchained, there's zero realism. Zero.
When he was writing it, though, do you think he had the N-word just copy-paste?
I think so. I think it was.
Because I'd get tired of typing that yeah. out constantly.
And why is he?
He used it a lot.
He is the
yeah,
only.
He goes to type the word no, and the N-bomb drops up there on, for auto, you know, auto text.
Yeah.
Why is he the only writer slash director, white man in the world that is allowed to drop the N-word and nobody gives him flack for it?
Samuel Jackson.
That's what I could fully believe okay. that.
Because Samuel Jackson?
He got a badass black man to say his words, and that gave him all the validity he needed.
Mm-hmm. I can't argue that. All right. Good call. One other thing I want to point out about him is he chooses songs to score his films, which some directors have emulated since then. And a lot of them seem utterly ridiculous. If you go and you listen to some of his soundtracks before you saw the movie, you would sit there and go, what the? I don't see the point of this for anything. But after you see the movie, they suddenly become cooler. Mm-hmm. There have actually been songs that I've heard before that I thought sucked. And I've heard them in a Tarantino movie, and suddenly I thought they were more artistic. They were more lyrical. They were just better songs. Why? I have no idea, because I'm a sucker for the fact that he used them, so it must be cool. Probably the Samuel
Michael
Jackson.
Michael Madsen can dance.
Exactly. I still can't hear that song without doing a little dance, wishing I had an ear in my hand.
Hello.
He has enough confidence in his material. This is my favorite part about Tarantino. He has enough confidence in his material to let a scene play out. Too many directors are so ADD addicted nowadays. They cannot trust their own filmmaking, or maybe the studios don't trust them enough. Maybe that's what it is. But their scenes just don't play out enough. They either make them too short, they're trying to zip to the next action scene, whatever it is, they don't let the dialogue play out. He lets it go. And occasionally it doesn't work, but 9 times out of 10 it works. And he just has that confidence. He's just that director that just leaves me with that feeling that I experienced something. I didn't really watch something, I experienced it. That's a great director to me. Brian, who's your pick?
Let me just give you a couple of movies this guy's done. Jaws, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, Hook, Jurassic Park, Schindler's List, Steven Spielberg.
He directed Steven Spielberg?
Yeah, he did. That's how good he is.
He directs.
He directs his own life. He has millions of extras that just cross in front of him and interact with him because his other half tells him so.
So now, do you feel he is... And I realize he's taken a turn for the more serious in the last few years and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Do you feel he is just as strong now as he was 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago? It's a legitimate question.
I don't think he is working as hard as he was 30 years ago. It seemed early 80s, late 70s through the probably mid 90s. He seemed to be cranking out movies at a much faster pace. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he's doing that as much now. And I think he's, of course, at this stage, he can be a lot more picky. And he can just kind of, like I say, pick and choose what he wants to do. And instead of just kind of, I just kind of want to do this and crank out these other ones because I've got a studio contract that says I've got to crank out, you know, 5 more pictures or something like that.
That's really the only reason I kept him from the top of my list, because I considered Spielberg as well. But I think for lifetime achievement, he would take it. But I haven't seen anything from him. I didn't see Lincoln, to be fair. I didn't see Lincoln, to be fair. But I haven't seen anything lately that just made me wow. Like Brian said, during the 90s.
He was the guy.
He was the guy.
Must go faster.
Oh.
So, yeah, for at least 2 decades, he pretty much owned the silver screen. And granted, probably the last 10 to 15 years, it's probably more missed than hits, or at least foul balls.
Well, see, I don't think that's fair. I think the last 10 or 15 years, he's been taking swings at hardier material, at heavier material, deeper material, where he was...
Instead of whimsical?
Whimsical, magical, childish fantasies, things like that. Things that appealed to him at a younger age that he wanted to keep doing. I think now that he's getting older, he wants to do more serious work and leave a mark, so to speak, in another area of filmmaking. So I don't necessarily think it's more misses. He's taking different chances.
And I can respect that, but he is really, truly at his best when he's dealing with a subject matter that, you know, literally takes him beyond the stars. When he's doing Close Encounters, when he's doing the earlier Indiana Jones films, that's when he really shines. And I don't know if he's stopped doing those sorts of films because of what, you know, you were just saying, or if it's because he doesn't want to just leave a legacy that's just, you know, speculative fiction type movies. But to me, that's when he really does his best work. And I wish... like hell that he would get back to it.
Really? You really want him to nail one of those before he goes kind of thing?
Yeah, I do.
I want to see him do what he does best. I want to see him directing Aliens, doing really cool stuff. I want to see a good Indiana Jones. Not that I hated Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, but I want to see something more on par with the first three. I just wish he would stop fucking around with, you know, weightier material and give me my summer blockbuster goodness. With Jaws, he invented the fucking thing.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
He did.
So stop
doing what you want to do and do what I want you to do.
That sounds like the Justin
there
I know.
There we go.
Spielberg? God damn it.
There's the McCumber we all love.
That's right.
What are you saying, Scott?
I say I didn't watch Close Encounters until like way later in life, like probably in the 2000s. I still enjoyed it just as much as I'm guessing you guys did back when it first came out. I think that movie still holds up. I loved it.
I agree, man. I agree. Now we come to Justin McCumber. And I just want to say, you're the one person I'm not sure which way you're going to go. Because I know you've got like 6 you want to pick. And I know at least 3 that you really wish you had honorable mentions so you could pick. So I want to know, who is Justin's great pick for greatest director?
Place your bets.
George Lucas.
Oh, yeah, let's place. Wait, before Justin goes. Scott, who do you think it's going to be?
Joss Whedon.
Brian?
George Lucas.
I'm going with Wachowskis. Justin?
Oh.
Ooh.
Oh, that, yep.
Justin, what's your number one? Or is he going to go, ooh, now he's going, Aaron, outside the box?
He's going to go rogue.
Aaron, you picked it, buddy. You know, I was going to try and throw you by saying, no, I've got 2 directors. And then you were going to go, oh, you can't have us. And then I was going to throw you the curveball of, they're siblings. But yes, it's the Wachowski, formerly the Wachowski brothers. Now the Wachowskis, maybe siblings, if you want to be a little more technical or precise about it.
How are they formerly brothers? Did they stop being brothers? Did they quit?
What? Well, since Lana considers herself a girl.
Wait, what happened?
Andy?
No.
Or yeah. not Andy. It was Larry.
Yeah. Not Lana or
changed
something?
Changed into Lana Wachowski.
Did not know that.
That's pretty serious. We make jokes about this every time they come up.
Really, I was not getting Cloud Atlas. I was not getting that joke. Nope.
Wow. Listen to the show.
No. And now The Matrix makes more sense to me. All right. Go ahead.
You know, they have really yet to make a film that I just haven't fallen head over heels for. I thought, you know, The Matrix is one of those movies that forever changed Hollywood and in the way that films were made. You know, for good or ill, I've seen good representations of people taking it and working with that kind of style, and I've seen plenty of bad. But it did have an effect on the way movies are made. I thought that what they did with the Animatrix, which the Wachowskis wrote several of, were phenomenally well done. But as I have controversially said in the past, and I will stick to these guns until I die, I think The Matrix Reloaded is the best of the three. I love the depth that they went to with the story of The Matrix. They took it in directions I really never saw coming. And I love it when a movie can go places that are beyond even my imagination. I loved Speed Racer. So many people want to shit on this movie, but if you're looking for a true cartoon to movie adaptation where they take everything that made the cartoon so unique and bring it to the screen, you know, fuck your Flintstones, fuck your Transformers. Speed Racer is the one that really did it right, because it is a cartoon practically in theaters, and it is so beautiful to watch. Those colors, great music. I cannot stop loving that movie. And yeah, Cloud Atlas. It was my favorite movie of 2012. I've seen it several times since then, and it never loses its magic for me. They're a directing couple, duo, whatever, that is not content, much like I said earlier with another director. They're not content to just tell some mediocre by-the-number story. They always go for something unique, something deeper, something that plunges into the who we are as human beings and maybe what our society is all about. Or they just go for pure joy, like they did with Speed Racer. I cannot wait to see Jupiter Ascending. I really think Sense8 is going to be a fantastic TV show, since they're working on it with J. Michael Straczynski. For me, if they have a movie coming out, I don't even need to see a trailer. I don't even need to hear what it's about. I am going to go see it, because I know that they're going to deliver for me. They never not.
I will tell you, Speed Racer, I'm not a fan of the story. I don't like the story. But visually, it is a beautiful film.
Yeah, the story is just visually kind striking. Of there to give a reason to go from one pretty scene to another. But the CG and the way they used it to really create this kind of whimsical cartoon feel has just never been done better, in my opinion.
All right. Well, who
remembers what a Speed Racer cartoon was about?
It
was just cars going fast.
Yeah.
And a monkey.
There's always
a monkey. Well, I think technically it was a chimp, but, you know, and those are not monkeys.
And then the asteroid came and the president was threatened. Now we're back to our Doomsday movie.
And now Gerard Butler's got to save the world.
Without a shirt. Yep. You know, how are they going to pull that off, by the way? They got to do that. Because he can't not have a shirt on at some point. He has to have a shirt off at some point.
Well, I'm sure there's like an airlock or something. Or there's going to be a spot on
the airlock will suck his shirt off. Okay. And we're going to go out. Linton Bowers, he wanted to hear one more time, Chewie Don't Take. So, because technically that was from episode 100, but we did play it recently because one of our, Scott Calgaro, sent an email where he demanded that we play it again. So technically it was demanded. Played this year. So just in honor of that, one more time, you guys can hear the Chewie Don't Take. Scott, is that one of your favorite moments?
It kind of is.
Yeah?
It was pretty funny.
Well, we're going to play the whole email because it's a very nice email. And more of you guys should write, like, have really nice emails like this and basically tell us we're awesome.
We appreciate this.
Absolutely. And here you go. Here's Chewie Don't Take. All right. Scotch Calgaro wrote in, "Hey hoes, stick a fork in me, bitches. I'm done. 165 episodes, 23 special editions." We had 23. Wow. "And spoiler cast, 15 interviews, 7 after hours / after dark specials, 2 drunk hosts, and 1 episode 100 extravaganza. Everything you guys have ever committed to the net waves, I have now listened to. With that in mind, please believe me when I tell you how fucking awesome your show is. Since I know you guys have been adding new listeners fairly consistently," yeah, I mean, we've lost them too, don't worry, we've scared some away. I think it's only fair that these newcomers be treated to what is, in my own humble opinion, the most hilarious 60 seconds you guys have ever recorded. Here it is. An interview inside, Andrew Garfield, who plays Spider-Man, He started an internet nerd war by saying, essentially, Spider-Man could be gay. Why not? So, and we're not going to get all politicky, but would that bother you guys as fans of the character? And obviously, I am the biggest fan of Spider-Man, so I will wait until last, but what do you guys think?
No. I mean, the character is not about his sexuality. You could replace, Mary Jane Watson with Marvin Watson, and it really wouldn't. To me, this is nothing to get upset about.
Scott, go ahead, Scott, because Brian's high and heavy.
I don't know, man. Like, would you feel that way if they made Luke Skywalker gay?
Yeah. Luke Skywalker is not about his sexuality either.
If Han Solo was having sex with a hairy Chewbacca dick, would you?
God, now you're getting into bestiality.
No. No, he's a Wookiee.
He's basically fucking a bear, and yes, I would take.
That is a very conscious, and I mean the fucking animal can fly a Millennium Falcon.
Hey, if Chewbacca,
he can have a sexual preference too.
How do we end up with Han fucking a Wookiee?
All right, yeah, you know what? If Chewie consents, they're two consenting adults, and they can do what they want, and I'm not going to hate on them.
So who's giving? Chewbacca or Han Solo?
Chewie's giving. I mean, come on.
He is bigger.
Chewie don't take.
I'm high-fiving you right now. Chewie don't take.
Brian, what is your thought on the actual topic?
I do not want to see Spidey swinging around in assless chaps and studded suspenders with a leather, like, ship captain hat and a handlebar mustache. I'm sorry.
He also continues, which, by the way, Harry Chewbacca dick is pretty funny. You guys continue to make my commutes the high point of my day. The only problem is that now that I've finished all your back episodes, you're just going to have to start recording every day to feed my addiction. Have fun with that. Thanks to all four of you for keeping me company in the car every day. Definitely ready for the next 211 recordings. Rock on, hoes. Wow, that's 211 total? That's a lot.
Why 211?
Think of all the games you could have played, Scott. Seriously, you could have finished at least one or two.
You just figure an average of an hour, let's say 45 minutes for each one of those 211 episodes. Do the math. How many
45 minutes?
1 hour and 45 minutes.
Oh, 1 hour and 45
minutes. Set an average. Jeez. Okay, that's going to do it for our best of ho. Scotty, did you enjoy those?
I did. It brings back fond memories of the year. I look forward to 2015.
Oh, we are there already. We're already in the future. I'm looking forward to it.
That's awesome.
I just want to tell you guys, remember, you can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher. You can go to the website at thehollywoodoutsider.com or RSS feed. I don't know what an RRRR feed is.
That's newfangled internets.
I'm still getting used to all this technology.
Lots of switches and stuff.
There is. You can email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Justin, Brian, Scott, and myself will be back in the new year. You're coming back next year, right?
Maybe.
In 2015? No. You're not sure yet?
I'll be here. I'm
really depends on if you get more vacation and games to play.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll have enough time.
Well, I hope everybody had a great holiday, and I hope you're having an even more fantastic new year. We will be talking to you soon. Our new show returns Thursdays, as always. First Thursday in January, we should be on there. That's not a New Year holiday. So look for us soon. We will be back. We miss you guys. From the Hollywood Outsider, Scott, what do you do the next time you go to a theater?
Buy popcorn.
Or corn that is popped.
Top three. We go 3, 2, 1, or was that round robin? Is that like...
Was this Lethal Weapon all of a sudden?
So I'll say all three of my choices at the same time.
No. 3, then 2, then 1.
1 plus 2 plus 1, 1 plus 2.
2 plus 1.
Aaron's already seen it. I assume Brian doesn't want to see it, but if I can get it to you, you can have it. I'm gonna purchase it again on...
Don't be making iTunes. Assumptions
Don't
on
be
him.
Be all stereotyping my ass down here.
Fuck, they play video games. They just got that one called The Wheel. Who can keep up with your anger? God, get a fucking chair.
We need to put a collection together.
I would recommend like one of those like hanging hammock type chairs.
Oh, that'd be nice.
There's no hardware to squeak with it.
He's just swinging into the microphone like Tarzan every now and again.
Doubles as a spin fuck chair.
Ooh, don't
toy balls with dangling me through the holes in the net.
Jesus. What's so special about it? Is it?
I don't know. Justin just saw collectible and he's like, "Fuck, need it."
Yep, pretty much.
What, you're starting now? I mean, it's usually like a little bit later.
No, that's because you're usually late. thanks to you guys. Thanks for being here. Remember, the next time you go to a theater, buy popcorn.
And Leon's getting larger.
Brian, that's I nominate you to take an ice bath.
I nominate you to go fuck yourself.
So I got to join you fuckers back in the back in the working world.
If it playtime's does over, motherfucker.
That's right. Playtime is over.
Good. Maybe I'll cancel my cable and get your HBO Go password.
Might have to.
You cannot lie.
Mm-mm. I like all butt, but I like big butts. And I cannot lie.
Wow, did we just hear that joke about 4 seconds ago?
Yeah, we just did a repeat. We just did a rinse, lather, and repeat.
Brought it right back around. I thought
maybe I was in Edge of Tomorrow or something, kind of reliving the same.
It's big and it's white and it's got a big red stripe and it looks like a big Tylenol.
How the fuck do you remember all these?
Oh.
And I should have known that would be the one Brian would go with, his fucking airplane.
Now this shit's really going to hit the fan. Someone's going to send him a dollar. Just
I hope so. I hope somebody sends you coin, bitcoins.
Me too.
Bitcoins are worth money now, man.
Oh, well, somebody just sends you random, like, Canadian coins that are worth
bitcoins
nothing.
Bitcoins were worthless now.
Are they already?
Yeah, just like a couple of days ago, like the guy that the head over the Bitcoin company is hiding out in Malaysia or something.
Because he's like,
oh, is he on the airliner that ended up on the Lost Island?
Do we really need to make jokes about 200 plus people dying?
Yes.
Yes.
When else do you get an opportunity like this? It just doesn't happen.
You people are heartless.
No hesitation from either of you. Yes.
Wouldn't they be fucked if they were on an island? You know, and some of them have seen that show going, are you fucking serious right now? Well, you'll know in my review. I'm going to try and review it, like, for both sides. People that haven't seen it. Because, you know, Serenity, some people had a hard time with it because they didn't know anything about the show.
Well, they should shut the fuck up and watch the show. That's their fault.
14 episodes is easier than 66, though.
Yeah.
I love that Justin's answer for everybody that has a problem is that they're not like him.
Yeah.
just be like more like Justin.
Thank you.
And the world will be a better place.
Thank you.
This is a Hollywood Outsider Weekly. We don't try, we do.
That's right, do not. Or no, fuck. Fuck the thing up.
Is that, please tell me you're recording?
Yeah,
because Justin just effed up a Star Wars line and I want that to be shown somewhere.
Hey, leads to what? Somebody's, I don't remember who.
Since,
what? Huh? What?
I would just, yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Hold on,
let me
awesome.
Go get my pipe now. I'm just going to fuck this up.
Who even has those?
I have a Vita.
God, what is with your
shut the fuck up
fucking chair?
Shut the fuck up.
Are you a homeless man? What
I'll
is the
I'll be looking tomorrow for another chair. Jesus.
Good Lord, man.
I've just worn it out.
He's got a springboard chair.
It's crying.
Fuck. Please stop.
It says I give up. I give up.
Yep, ready to go.
You want to get any last squeaks out or anything? Or?
All right, we're
I swear
good.
It sounds like you're fucking in that chair. I swear to God it does.
Chair probably thinks that too at this point.
And of course, to end the show, we had a lot of requests to please replay The Christmas Carol from the Christmas episode, from the Hollywood Outsider Christmas special. And even though we know this is not necessarily Christmassy, it was done so well and it was so reflective of the entirety of our show that we thought we'd get another replay as your final goodbye 2014. So this is from Scott Clark. He wrote it himself. If you have never heard this, this is pretty funny. This is his reinterpretation, remake, reboot, and requel of 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. Take it away, Scott. It's time for us to – we're going to get back into the Christmas spirit.
Bring in the positive a little bit. I'm feeling kind of bummed out.
And this is the moment where Michael Bonovich demanded that we read a Christmas poem on this episode. So Scotty is going to recite that Christmas poem. He's going to dazzle us. He wrote it himself. I haven't heard it yet. I have no idea what this is going to be, but it's supposed to be like podcast specific.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you're incorporating hosts, some listeners. I don't know what you're doing. It's going
to
be crazy.
But
what I do want to do is I want to set the mood.
You want to set the mood.
I want to stoke a fire.
Okay.
I want to get you a little ready to talk about it. So here I'm going to cue this. Oh, you feel that?
Oh wow, that
feel that? Oh, that's nice. Me rubbing my hands together. Nothing else. Oh yeah.
Well, it's feeling a lot warmer in here.
Hang on, I'm putting my sweater on.
I'm feeling more in the Christmas mood now that we got the fire going.
Now, dazzle awesome. Me. I want to hear this.
All right.
Wait, I need my beverage.
You need your beverage? You got like a blanket or maybe a hot cup of?
If you do it right, I'll cuddle.
You cuddle. Mm-hmm. All right, here we go. This is the ho version of 'Twas the Night Before Christmas.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I want to speak up because the fire is pretty loud.
Fire's loud. Okay, here we go. 'Twas the night before Christmas, and the podcast was done. Not a creature was stirring, except for me and my Xbox One. The I'm a Ho shirts were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that more listeners soon would be there. The hoes were all nestled, snug in their beds, while visions of Jennifer Lawrence danced in their heads.
Ooh, I like this.
And Brian with his banjo, Justin his squeaky chair, had just settled down to enjoy some Jew Bears. When down in the basement, there arose such a clatter, I sprang from my man cave to see what was the matter. Down the stairs I flew with a crash, tore open my laptop, and threw in my flash. The glow of my screen made me realize what was happening. I was suddenly reminded of the days of the fappening.
Awesome.
What I saw on the page filled my eyes with such wonder. A Facebook post and 8 comments under. With a hint of sarcasm and the air of a baron, I knew in a moment it had to be Aaron. More rapid than eagles, the witty banter came. Then he furiously started to type them by name. Scott Calgaro, Craig Schermerhorn, Chris Bonovich, D.A. Cheney, Ashley Stewart, Steve Peterson, Dave McGrath, and Amy. To the top of the Ho group, to the top of Ho wall. Now post away, post away, post away all. Then Justin continues to pimp his new book. And Aaron won't stop talking about Babadook. As for me, I still try to be the mediator. And Brian reminds us to go to the theater. And then, in a twinkling, the comments became crude. I wouldn't exactly say they were rude, but some of the words just made my head shake, particularly the one that said, Chewy don't take. It's Christmas. Have some cider and maybe a cookie. How do we end up with Han fucking a Wookie? We're grown men. We're adults. And none of us slobs. And as of this year, we all now have jobs.
Hey! That was brilliant.
The reviews, how they sparkled, and not just for comics. Our scores have a twist. They use economics. The studios unfortunately don't give us commission, but we still judge our films with the price of admission. To all of our fans who have tuned in for weeks, we know that, like us, you're all movie geeks. Our only request that we hope you adopt when seeing a movie by corn that is popped.
That was good. I kind of want to leave this fire going for the whole episode.
Yeah, we should. It was getting a little chilly in here.